freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go with another Brock and Salk podcast. I want to start by apologizing, Brock. I guess it's appropriate to say we're sorry.
Oh.
I know this has been, for most people, a perfect week. Right? Politically, for everybody, everyone's happy. Both sides of the aisle. Politically, everyone's great. Seahawks fans, psyched. Mariners, like, if you're a sports fan, if you're just a...
Sonics are coming back, bro.
Everything's great. And unfortunately, throughout all of that good cheer, we were late with the podcast this week. I know it's the one thing screwing up an otherwise perfect life for everybody right now. Yep. And I just want to say I'm sorry. It is our fault. It's my fault. My scheduling didn't work.
I thought you were apologizing because the Seahawks played the exact game you and Brock called for.
And
the exact thing Howdy and I told you would happen happened.
We warned you this would happen, and then lo and behold,
what, that
it
the
happens.
Defense didn't come up with a turnover.
Oh, please!
Well, if they could just slop it up and play ugly for three quarters, then we can just hope for a miracle late.
Well, they didn't.
That's
play
the
ugly.
Game plan.
They didn't play ugly enough. What do you mean?
Excuse me?
You got to come up with
they
a
didn't
turnover
what?
Or two. You're playing a decapitated finger, Jared Goff, and you can't come up with a turnover. Come on, defense! You got to come up with that. By the way, DJ Reed does. If his knee's down, they win the game.
I'm going to Jay Buter
wrong.
On
yeah,
you
they do.
For this.
Absolutely wrong.
If DJ Reed's knee is down, I bet you they win.
They were never. They lost that game at halftime because they were never getting to 21 points.
Never.
If DJ Reed's knee is down, I think they win the game.
Oh, there's no way.
Now, his knee wasn't down. I'm not like arguing the call.
Even after that, they still didn't have a semblance of life, which they normally do.
They scored right after it.
They
terrible.
Took like, two snaps in the red zone the entire game.
They literally scored the next drive.
That's a not. And
they're garbage.
What do you mean they showed no signs of life? Literally, they scored right after it.
And what happened to the next drive?
Well, not much.
Yeah, exactly. They did not
it was
have
over
the end game
point.
Histrionics they needed to have.
After that, it was over.
Ugh.
I don't know.
250-yard field goals, a broken play touchdown to DK Metcalf. That offense made it to the red zone one time at the end of the game.
The Rams get a fluke, bizarre interception touchdown.
No fluke.
Total
he
fluke.
Broke on that ball. He knew exactly
right,
the play that was coming.
I mean,
coming.
But in general, those don't happen. It was the first time a wide receiver screen had been intercepted the entire season.
Fact.
Troy Aikman was very adamant that that's not something you expect to have happen when you're a quarterback.
Once again, Russell throws an awful game-losing pick, and he gets no blame for it. We've been here before.
Does he deserve the blame for that one, Brock?
No.
Really?
No. There's absolutely nothing you can do
on that play.
What a
weird play.
I mean, and in fact, you had two guys. It wasn't just Jermaine Kearse. You had two guys that were to block one, and David Moore decided to, for some reason, in a really loud stadium, I mean, it was just going wild, that he's staring at the ball and not looking at the defense in front of him, and then
Freddie
you got a rookie Swain that's just stuck there.
Howdy's guy.
It's a hard block.
Thanks for that.
Made a
but
great
my
catch
gosh,
oh,
what
thanks.
A David Moore, what a disastrous play. What a disastrous game for him and so many others, but ugh.
Well, all right. So I have a lot of questions. I think I have answers to them.
Okay.
You may not like them.
You're not off to a good start.
If it's like your DJ Reed answer, then.
So the three of us, let's be very clear, Salk. There's no question.
So
the three of us, Howdy, Kyle, and myself, were watching that game and just consistently thinking of your words over the last, I don't know, month
Which
and a half.
Which was what?
I love how this team's playing.
I do.
I just love this style. Oh, they're just back to championships. I guarantee you that the three of us thought about you more than we thought about any individual, more maybe even than Pete or Russell or Aikman or anybody else was sitting there going, gosh, what is Salk possibly thinking?
I was honestly through a half of football. I was like, felt great. I felt like they were going to win the game. I really did. Like, what didn't even occur to me that they were going to lose that game until all of a sudden it fell apart in the third quarter with kind of what went down there. And obviously the DJ Reed turnover, sort of the end of it. I thought that they would come up with a turnover themselves.
I did too.
And honestly,
there are multiple opportunities.
If they did, I think there's a really good chance they win that. I mean, like if the turnover, I know people are furious about the offense and furious about this, that, and the other. At the end of the day, the Seahawks turned it over twice and the Rams didn't turn it over. That's why you lost the game.
Yep. They're 12-0.
I know that's not a fashionable, cool thing to say. It's much more fun to talk about, you know, Schottenheimer, since obviously he's been let go, and to talk about Russ, and you got to trade your franchise quarterback, which is asinine. I've heard a million bad takes over the last 4 days, and maybe you could throw mine right up there with them. But they lost because they lost turnover battle. You turn the ball over twice, the other team didn't turn it over. Of course you lost.
Yep.
But look, I don't know, why is there even a debate
about
this?
When both of those turnovers, you turned it over twice,
the other team didn't turn it over. Of course you lost.
Yeah.
How many times do you see this? The Seahawks, every single game they lost this year, didn't they turn it over more than twice? When you turn it over, you lose. This is not brain surgery. What is written on Pete's wall everywhere? It's all about the ball. You turned it over twice. The other team didn't turn it over. Oh, by the way, one of your turnovers was a pick six, and the other one prevented you the opportunity to come back like every team in the NFL does this year. You can call my take crazy all you want, Howdy. Kyle. You get all snooty if you want. I was thinking of you, Salk. Well, I hope you were. Because I follow what Pete has to say, and he tells me it's all about the ball. And the Seahawks didn't take care of the ball twice, and were unable to turn the ball over against a guy that didn't have a hand. A throwing hand.
They got lucky they faced Jared Goff. John Wolford would have beat him worse.
You don't know that.
Oh, he would have.
You do not know
that. Straight up and down the field.
John Wolford is an AAF quarterback. Stop.
Jared Goff could fluttering balls. He could barely complete 50%. John Wolford would have beat them worse.
You don't know that.
I don't know that.
If John Wolford throws two picks in addition to a bunch of completions,
Jared Goff's the one who turns the ball over, not John Wolford.
He didn't. But
John
he didn't.
Wolford's a king.
How do you know what John Wolford does?
Because I watched him beat the Arizona Cardinals, Mike.
I feel about
it. Arizona Hotshots.
About as sure about John Wolford as I felt about Ezekiel Elliott being better than Thomas Rawls coming into the league.
All right.
It's pretty much a given.
Calm down over there. Just calm down over there. Look, can't turn the ball over twice, and you can't not get a turnover in a playoff game and expect to win against a good team and a great defense.
I know this is late in the week, so we're not going to rehash every play of this game because Lord knows that's been done for the last 5 days. But I did last night, I did go back knowing that we would chat. I wanted kind of a refresher to put a lot of these plays and moments and the game and perspective. I went back and actually watched coach's tape, and there were so many opportunities. I will give Salk that. There were so many opportunities. If Jamal Adams could play the ball at all, he's got a pick six himself.
Yes.
And another interception on a ball that didn't have a torn labrum. I know, but he didn't play. He doesn't play the ball anyway. Like all season long, he can't intercept a ball.
He got two hands on the ball. No. He just couldn't raise.
That was a problem long before he hurt his arm.
I think he has two interceptions in his career.
One was a pick six against Brady. I was in Vegas for that one, and the Jets covered because of it, and people went nuts.
Woo! Yes,
summit my table.
So you have just multiple, he alone has multiple opportunities to just make a, and then he has one down when they're coming out near the goal line, yep. You know, that he collisions. He does a nice job collision. Like if he's a half step forward, that's another pick. Like they had so many of those chances. The game's 13-10, right? Near the end of the first half. And they complete a third. You let Jared Goff scramble. Neil breaks assignment, and then you can't tackle Akers, and that leads to a touchdown drive to put it. Like, get off the field, 13-10. You get the ball there. You may score before half to tie it. Then you get the ball out to begin the second. Like, there were moments to be had.
Yeah, I know that there's going to be nonstop hand-wringing because it feeds into the narrative that people were expecting, and maybe there's some truth to it. I'm not saying there's none. There are multiple ways you can win a football game. But Pete's way can work. You do have to get the turnovers. You can't turn it over yourself. And I will say, they didn't adjust very well in the game at all. I mean, the route combos they were running, I mean, there was nothing. They didn't move the pocket. They didn't do anything to deal with the fact that their offensive line was trash in that game. They got run over in every way.
Yep.
And that was something that was not a problem for them this year the way it was in that game.
Yeah, I know two third and ones, and then ultimately even a fourth and one that you – false start to fourth and six, just dead drives, holding call after holding call after holding call, dead drive, dead drive, dead drive.
First and 25, time and time.
What are you even going to do? And then Russell has an opportunity to throw a deep to DK Metcalf, who's wide open, and I'm not going to blame Russ for that. Aaron Donald's in his grill because he was untouched.
Because you potty
can't play. Russell Wilson's fault.
Yep.
You potty gets completely burned, literally fans on the best player in the league, and Russ doesn't have a split second to even find DK. The fact that he even got it out there was a miracle. So yep. I know it's fashionable to blame Russ and say he's toast. You're wrong. I know it's fashionable to blame Pete and say his game is toast. You're wrong, too. The Seahawks offensive line played like trash in this game. Played like absolute garbage, and that's got to get fixed. That can't happen, and you've got to win the turnover battle. But if you do those things, I think they win.
But I think, and we'll give Howdy his time, and we'll give Kyle his time. I think, Mike, even as I listen to you say that, I understand. I think Russell is still top three quarterback in the league, and you can win another championship with him. This has now been a half a decade with Pete in these playoff games that at some point you've got to say, I mean, Pete, maybe your style is effective, but you don't have the personnel to do it. I firmly believe that when he stepped in there on Monday at that press conference,
that's a really important
point. He hadn't fired Shoddy yet on that Monday when he met the press. And I know we'll get to Shoddy, we'll get to the coordinators, we'll have all sorts of just great discussion today. So
well, I need to know more about that because, Brock, what you just said is they don't have the personnel. And yet after, so you're saying it's a personnel issue to play that style.
Yet after
the season, they re-signed the personnel guy and fired the coach, the coordinator. Explain that to me.
I will. Let me hold on to that for just one second.
I'm
because
hold on for a while because
hold
I'm,
on to
I'm,
it for
I'm,
just
I'm gonna rip my teeth into it.
Hold on for one second
like a,
because
like a crazy
so Monday Pete meets the press. And I have a hunch that on Sunday he watched some football, that he watched his own tape again and everything else. And, you know, I'm sure he watched a little bit of football and he watched the Baltimore Ravens and went, that's my team. That's my style. Those dudes intimidate. Those guys hit. Those guys are physical. Those guys run for 250 yards in a playoff game. Those guys own Derrick Henry and destroyed the line of scrimmage. That's my team. That's my style. And for some reason, it's being played by guys in purple 3,000 miles away in Baltimore. But that's Pete's ball. That's what he wants to do. But he's got a group personnel-wise that can't do that.
Well,
Cedric, go back and watch that tape. Go back and watch Brian Monet. Go back and watch Cedric Lattimore. Go back and watch Rasheem Green. Go back and watch those guys up front get mauled.
Then why do you extend Schneider? And I'm not, this isn't a shot. I'm not saying they shouldn't have. But if you're going to tell me that the problem isn't Pete's style, the problem is the personnel to play it, why did you extend the guy who brings in the personnel?
Because you have to be able to adapt your personnel to what they can do. You have your style. This is the way we want to play. This is the scheme I would like to play, but if Mike Iupati cannot block and Jordan Simmons and
then
Ethan
Pulsa
cannot,
why did you extend the guy who brought them in? And I'm
because,
not saying they shouldn't. I think there's some good reasons for bringing John
Schneider. Yes, because you believe that he's given those guys enough in the cupboard to say, okay, yeah, here you go. Now you may have to play to their strengths and what they can and cannot do. Right, but I'm giving you enough talent. You're going to have to now shape it a little bit. And Pete,
so
you're going to have to shape some of your style.
Coaches didn't coach them up enough?
What's that?
So I'm trying to follow your argument because this is important. This is the key to it all. Pete isn't happy. Pete believes in his style, right? We all agree with that.
And I think his style is most closely resembled by the Baltimore Ravens.
But you told me he doesn't have the horses to do that. He doesn't have the personnel to play like the Baltimore Ravens. So if you don't have the personnel to play like them, either you didn't draft or acquire the right personnel, or you didn't coach the personnel you have into being the types of players you want them to be.
Yes.
And you think it's the latter?
Oh, I think yes. And by the way, Pete
that's a hard conclusion for me to believe.
Pete and John believe they've got the personnel. And they don't have Paul Allen telling them you don't. Jody and Bert Cold and them are going to, right? And so I think John and Pete believe that, hey, man, look at Jordan Brooks is just an absolute baller. DK Metcalf is a Pro Bowl.
So they just didn't call the game the way the Ravens did?
That is, in order to make the move to fire Shoddy over the second half of the year and even in that playoff game and matching up, most importantly, Mike, with these Rams who you cannot match up with and have not matched up with now in 3 or 4 years, Pete and John must believe that we've got to get someone with new eyes, a new philosophy that is going to be able to run the ball against those guys and win at the line of scrimmage. That's what they believe. And they believe that, you know, they've got the talent evaluators to do it. They believe their young people, as Pete always does, are good enough to do it. And I, for one, look at the personnel and say, I'm sorry, if you believe that Jordan Simmons and Ethan Posick and Mike Iupati, and by the way, your tight ends couldn't block Jacob Hollister, you think that those guys are good enough to run a run and pound and beat the Rams and ultimately beat a healthy Niners front and beat those guys? I'm sorry, they're not. They're not, in my opinion.
So you wouldn't have done what they did. You wouldn't have re-signed Schneider.
Oh, I think that there is a lot to be said about continuity, Mike. I can't go that far. I agree with that. I spent
a long time thinking about Schneider. I mean, he's in many. I mean, the Schottenheimer move to me is actually less interesting than the Schneider move. And I know that again might be somewhat unpopular because people are going crazy over the OC and this and that. But to me, the Schneider move is interesting because I thought heading into this year was a huge year for him.
Yep.
Right. The last few drafts hadn't panned out. Some of the acquisitions. Clowney was gone, and you're looking at Schneider going. Look, and I say this with great love because John Schneider is truly one of my favorite people that I've met in this business. Without pause. The only person I might like better than him is his wife, Tracy, who's amazing.
Maybe Zarentic. You and Zarentic had a good relationship.
Stop. They're honestly, they're great. I love it's an, it, personally couldn't love them more. But heading into this year, you're looking at it and saying, all right, hold on. Everything Kyle's been saying for a while, there's a lot of truth to it. There wasn't a lot in the cupboard, and the last few drafts were a disaster, and Clowney was going to be gone, and this, that, and the other. And you're saying, okay, well, you bet the farm on Jamal Adams working out because you gave up two first-round picks plus. Where are you? And I think that personnel-wise, Schneider had a great year. His draft class from this year looks great. Honestly, looks great, and that's without your number two pick even contributing a down. If that guy ever shows up next year, Daryl Taylor, then you look. I mean, Brooks looks like he's a really good player. Damian Lewis looks like a really good player. I mean, like
Alton Robinson almost led your team in sacks
for where you drafted him. Very good player. If you'd gotten his production out of Daryl Taylor, you would have said, "Okay, that's fine." I mean, it's not like great, but that's Frank Clark is his rookie year. Okay, fine. And now all of a sudden last year's draft class looks better. Collier had a much better year. Not perfect, but he had a much better year and played like a, what'd you say, Brock, a second round pick? A third round? Okay, fine, but you drafted him in the late first round. It's not like he was a top 10 pick or something. DK Metcalf's a superstar.
Ugo Amadi's been great.
Really, really good.
Marquise Blair, you got big hopes for. He's been banged up.
All right, so all of a sudden, like, your last two draft classes look better. The Clowney thing looks like he looks like a genius for the way he played Clowney. He traded for Dunlap. All right, the cornerback didn't work out, Dunbar, but so what? You didn't give up anything for that guy. That's a risk-free move on a fifth-round pick that unfortunately didn't play, and you got DJ Reed, who did what you were hoping Dunbar would do.
Yep.
So, I mean, honestly, and Adams worked out. So I think you look at what Schneider did in the last year and say, okay, that guy absolutely did his job. And I still don't think that's the reason they kept him. I think the reason you keep John is because of the culture that's been built here.
No question.
Right?
No question.
It's Fitterer, and it's...
It's relationship with Pete. Pete is not easy. Okay? He's not. Pete meddles. Pete's, you know, a strong opinion. Pete is a Hall of Fame coach.
Right.
It's not easy to have an egoless relationship. It's not easy to work in unison. It's not easy. Look at all of these programs that get destroyed.
It's his affability, right?
Yes.
It's that John's a good guy, and Trent Kirshner's a good guy, and Scott Fitter, like that whole group of them. You saw the report that came out last week in Houston saying, well, why are they talking to Kirshner? Because they need somebody who can make people want to play there, right? Who makes it a fun place to be.
And they work to consensus, which is so ridiculously hard in this league, especially at the upper echelon with incredibly accomplished coaches. You work and you have a consensus builder and a consensus maker. That's why you sign him back. That's why.
Agreed.
Because as long as Pete is here, you're going to need somebody to work with him, right? You're going to need to hopefully have a sounding board for him. And yeah, to your point, someone that's going to, from the front office standpoint, build the same kind of culture that he builds of positivity, not player haters, not everything they can't do,
right,
but really try to build your players up. And that is why I think that consensus, Mike, trumps what you were framing the earlier conversation and discussion.
I agree with that. And I think I would have done the same thing. And I think I probably would have re-signed John for exactly that reason, that the culture of what they're trying to do is more important than the specific player evaluation in a world where people get lucky. I mean, there's cases to be made that nobody, there's no such thing as a good player evaluator. That you have good streaks and bad streaks and that the whole thing's a crapshoot. Otherwise, you know, fifth round picks would never outplay first round picks. I mean, like, there's a case to be made that a few years ago, Thomas Dimitroff was the biggest genius in all of football. Now he's fired from the Falcons. I mean, like, this happens all the time with these guys. The Rams have been on a hot streak. Earlier, you were on a hot streak. Somebody, like, there are better, there's worse. I'm not saying that there's no difference, but, you know, there's a case to be made that talent evaluation is bunk.
There's not much that separates, man. There's not much that separates. And as we have this discussion, honestly,
there's so much consensus on these guys.
Yeah, here's the challenge to me. Like, as we have all of this discussion, you know, when the Seahawks won world championships, when they got themselves there and should have won back-to-back, they had game wreckers. Take the game over. Difference makers. In everything that we just talked about and all the different personnel we talked about and all these young guys and everything else, bottom line in a league, and especially when you get to the playoffs, not a lot separates people. You know what Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd were? They absolutely wrecked your game. They destroyed and have destroyed Russell's rhythm. They've destroyed his clock. Mm-hmm. Everything that you want to do, you can't block them. Three guys can't block them, Mike. I mean, it was just to watch the coaches' tapes, why Aikman said it's the best defensive player I've ever seen. I think there's an argument right now if he doesn't play another down in the NFL and you looked at his body of work, it's Lawrence Taylor and Aaron Donald of the greatest game wreckers in the history of NFL football on defense. And you can't block them.
Yeah.
You can't block them.
Probably throw Reggie White in there too.
And yes, and Reggie White's right up there. And then Leonard Floyd, he sacked Russell seven times this year in three games. Seven times. How many Seahawks had seven sacks?
It's insane. That's crazy.
He sacked Russell seven times this
Everybody
season.
Everybody sacks
alone.
Russell Wilson. Like, so what?
He's going to set an NFL record for being sacked in his career, by the way. By a lot.
Probably true. But he's
played. Curtis ran the numbers. He's on pace to have, like, be sacked 200 more times than Brett Favre.
He also has, and some of it's on him.
Absolutely.
Yes. And some of it is on some really, really bad offensive line play.
Yes, it is.
Honestly. I mean, there's both. And some of it's on Russ. He would rather take a sack than throw a pick.
And he'd rather try to extend a play than throw the ball away.
And I wish he would throw the ball away more often. There are times where you just have to. But some of it's on some really bad offensive.
Really
play.
Bad.
Like, unwatchable. Where you're just like, that play didn't have a chance. They snap the ball, and we've made this reference for years. It looks like Tecmo Bowl, the original, when somebody else calls the play. Oh, we both called, you know, right and A. Oh, well.
I've often thought if you put Salk at left guard on that play, you referenced a DK Metcalf.
Exactly the same.
Instead of ducking your head, and you had your old flippers, right? And the old, when you're playing nose tackle, flippers? You had those old pads.
Arm
and
guards. Arm pads, yeah. Yeah.
And you would have just simply been a bump in the road for Aaron Donald. He would have had to have at least stepped on you on his way over you to Russell.
And I think, squishy. That might have hurt. That might have slowed him
Russell,
down.
I think Russell. And you also probably, while he stepped on you, could have put your head right between his whoop whoop, and maybe slowed him down for half a second.
Again? Why would he have done that?
What do you mean? I'm saying when he stepped on you.
Hold on.
His what?
Wait, what right would happen now?
His solar plexus. You would have at least put your helmet as he stepped on you, right? You would have sat up and put your helmet in his solar plexus and maybe slowed him down.
I don't think I would.
Like the Undertaker out of a coffin. Just wham!
Yes.
Right into him.
Yes.
You think that I would have put my helmet into his midsection?
Solar
while
plexus.
He was stepping on me.
Sure. Yep.
I'm not even tall
Mike,
enough to
as
do
a
that.
Team player.
I'm on protect Russell
Wilson.
On the ground.
You'd have done it.
I don't think I could have. I don't think that's physically possible.
Aaron Donald's quite short.
I didn't think it was physically possible for Aaron Donald to get to Russell 10 yards deep with somebody who was there to block him. I didn't think that was humanly possible, but it did.
Yeah, it's fair.
It happened.
Yeah. Well, okay. Anyway, back to the Schneider part of it. We'll get to Schottenheimer here in a few minutes. I think I would have done the same thing. It still would have been pretty hard for me. And I say this with great love and respect for everything Schneider has done, and I think we'll continue to do. I think there's also a case to be made, and you made it earlier, Brock, that maybe they just needed a different eye. They just need a different eye. It's not a shot. It's not because he's done a bad job. It's just that maybe it's time to have a different eye.
Well, they went cheap in the two most important parts about being Pete Carroll. The offensive line and the defensive line.
Bizarre.
And they went cheap.
Yep.
Very clearly, For 2 years, they've gone cheap at that position.
It's so strange.
Yes.
It doesn't, it's like, and this is why we talk so much about philosophy and so much about identity, because it dictates how you're going to behave. You have a sign on the wall that tells you what to do. It's a North Star for everybody. What are we? We're a physical football team that cares about the ball. Okay, what do we need? Better have a great quarterback because you can't exist without it. And then you better have a great offensive and defensive line. Like, well, this shouldn't be that hard. And yet, year after year, what do they do? We're going to try out Brandon Schell and Cedric Abuehi and the guy
Chance
who didn't,
Warmack.
Right, like
DJ Finney.
We'll see if all of that works.
Greg really? Olson.
You sure don't just
million.
Want Jack Conklin? Nah.
Correct.
Nah,
correct.
Forget Jack Conklin. That guy's good. We know he's good. We're going to test out five guys and see what happens.
Yep.
Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Well, nope. We really want to be a physical, run-in-your-face football team. Hey, you know what we should do? We should bring in two of the best pass-catching tight ends in the game over the course of the last 7 years. First, let's go get Jimmy Graham. We've continued to say it's the worst decision Seahawks have ever made. At least I do. I don't know about we. I believe that's the worst decision the Seahawks have made in the Pete and John era. And then this year, Greg Olsen, where they just wasted money. That's just wasted money.
A lot of money.
And $7 million.
And you don't have that money to waste when you have Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner that you're paying Hall of Fame money to.
Correct.
So
you could have had, instead of, and Vince Mayo had a really nice year,
good,
and Pete
and
referenced
like
him, and they would love to have him back.
Yep.
He played hard. But you could have had Leonard Floyd instead of Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayoa. Mm. You could have had Leonard Floyd. You could have had a game wrecker. Mm. Someone that would have fit beautifully in your system and played Sam linebacker and then been the rush end. And you could have had him. You could have had, instead of Schell and Obuehi and Finney, you could have had Jack Conklin. You could have. And those guys are just game changers. And you get to this stage of the playoffs, As we know, when the Seahawks ran the table and won a Super Bowl nearly another, you have to have, you know, Russell last year said superstars. Ah, we got to have superstars. If I heard Mike once, I heard 15 times this year, the way that the coaches that I talk to in the NFL, they call them game wreckers. I need a game wrecker. Somebody that can take this game over and change it himself. And they are rare and they are really hard to find.
If John were here, I will play his part. He would say something like, yeah, that's great, except this is the NFL, especially in a COVID weird year where guys could get hurt. You got to have depth. That it's not just about players 1 through 22. It's about 23 through 54, and we needed to make sure that we had those guys on our roster. So, yeah, you're right. You could have had Floyd, true, but if that guy gets hurt, you are up a creek, whereas I had Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayoa and someone. And for me, and look what happened. Bruce Irvin did end up getting hurt. And if I had bet the farm on Floyd and he'd gotten hurt, we're screwed. Whereas in this case, like, okay, I still have the ability to go out and get Dunlap and this, that, and the other. I'm not saying he's right. I'm just saying that would be the
certainly
argument.
The
back.
Only issue with it is their replacement level players. And the difference between Cedric Obuehi and Chad Wheeler is probably very little.
In fact, we saw that it was zero.
Yes.
It
and B.J. Finney to Jamarco Jones.
It's all true. All totally true, that those are replacement guys. I'm not saying that the argument works, but I do believe there is
I thought the same, because they did end up using most of those. Oh, boy, he ended up starting games for you.
And not killing you, quite frankly.
But not a difference maker. Clear. I mean, who's a difference maker? I mean, who's a difference maker on your O-line? Right? I mean, watch the playoffs. Watch Green Bay. Watch Tampa Bay. Watch Baltimore. Watch them this weekend. Watch Kansas City if they can get some people that have been nicked up. You'll see difference makers. Mm-hmm. Your right tackle is not a difference maker. Your right guard was a good rookie. Can't pass block. He's not a difference maker right now. Posick, we bragged about this year, but in brutal matchups in the playoffs where you're going to get the most brutal of matchups, not a difference maker. Your left guard is a sieve, and your left tackle is a difference maker. Dwayne's a difference maker. And unfortunately, we can talk about wasting Russell's prime years. You wasted two incredible years of Dwayne Brown. And we know since Walter Jones how hard that position at left tackle is in this league.
Well, take a look at the Rams. How much better were the Rams with Andrew Whitworth?
Tremendous.
I mean, like night and day. Day.
Night
and day. 39 years
different.
Old still.
With a compact spine.
Yeah.
So, compressed. Compressed vertebrae.
Yeah, you told me they shouldn't go get him because of it.
Yep.
Thanks. Good job on that one.
Well, like you said earlier, we can all have messes.
We all whiff. That's for sure. We can all whiff. So, where were the difference makers? Russell wanted superstars. I don't know if those were the kinds of superstars he wanted. If they had gone out and gotten Jack Conklin and who else did you say? Floyd?
Leonard Floyd.
If they had gotten those two guys, would Russell have said, okay, we got superstars? I don't know.
Well, they got Jamal Adams. This is a superstar, superstar.
You could have done
superstar.
The thing is, you could have done those things and gotten Jamal Adams.
Yes. Yes. And
you could
Carlos
have done that
Dunlap.
And gotten those guys.
Yes.
What does this team look like with Floyd and Dunlap and Adams and KJ and all those guys?
They look like they're heading to New Orleans this weekend.
Correct.
That's what they look like.
And that's what New Orleans has.
I don't like saying this because this is again, like, it's sacrilege, but you bet on one difference maker on defense, specifically Bobby Wagner. Was he a difference maker this year?
Nope.
He was a good player.
Good
don't
player.
Get me wrong. Bobby didn't. Last year, I thought Bobby had a bad year. This year, I did not think that. Did he have a great year? Difference maker? Causing, you know, major, huge plays when it really mattered and forcing big fumbles and everything else that you expect out of your Hall of Fame money kind of player? No.
Four great games.
He played well. Bobby had a good year. You have a great year? Difference maker?
$18 million, $4 million than any other linebacker makes in this league? No. Will there be better middle linebackers playing this weekend? Yes. Yes. Is he still challenged in the passing game tremendously and matchup-wise has a hard time in coverages? Yes. Yes, and you're paying him an exorbitant amount of money.
And my guess is, and I don't know these things, but my guess is that can't continue next year. How do you continue to pay him that much money again? How do you do that? Like, and I like Bobby. Again, he's a really good player and A-plus guy.
Culture setter.
You have to have it. Captain of your team for a reason. They have a normal amount. Is it the Rams that have like 30 captains on their team? There's a couple of teams out there where you're
Well, Jared Goff's your quarterback, you have to have everybody else fill the vacuum.
Like, backfill.
Everyone wears a C. Brockers wears a C. Donald wears a C. Like, everyone's a captain of that team. I guess your coach is like
great
12.
Leadership, Mike.
You know, you just keep throwing out captains. But Bobby's there's reasons to keep guys like John Schneider and Bobby Wagner. Like, that they do important things for you. But the amount of money you're paying Bobby, I mean, I know you're seeing right now this whole Bobby KJ thing. You got it. How are you going to keep
just
KJ?
Just seen Anderson reporting this week. KJ wants a new deal, or he's a restricted free agent.
I didn't recognize it early in the year. But since moving to strong side linebacker, did KJ not have a better year than Bobby?
Oh, he was incredible.
I know. Did he not have a better
year
than Bobby?
In a row, incredible. Yeah.
I don't think KJ was still a Sam linebacker or a weak side linebacker, and he doesn't have the speed anymore to do it. And everyone told me, Brock, you used to say, well, he can't set an edge. That's not really what his game is. Well, it became his game.
Yep.
He set an edge this year.
Yep. Only player in the league with 10 tackles for a loss and 10 passes defense.
I thought KJ, once he moved to that position, was fantastic. I thought he was more effective and more of, what was your game wrecker? More of a game wrecker than Bobby was this year.
Yes.
So you're telling me that at the end of the year, you're going to let KJ Wright go and keep paying Bobby Wagner what you are? How does that make any sense? I can't imagine they're going to do that. Especially after drafting Jordan Brooks a year ago.
Who played really well.
Who played faster
than Bobby at the end of the year.
And who you can't afford to have as your first round pick playing, you know, 12 to 20 snaps a game next year, if he's good. So the Bobby one, like, I know that all the focus is going to be on Russ and Schottenheimer and the coordinator. We'll talk about that here in a moment. You sure that Bobby Wagner's coming back at his salary next year? I'm not. Not with the Jordan Brooks draft, not with KJ playing the kind of year that he just played. I know that you got to have some tone setters, but guess what you went out and acquired in the offseason and who you're going to have to pay? Jamal Adams. That's what he is. He's a tone setter.
Yep.
So I
Oof, the NFL never rests.
No.
Man,
and this team's got some big, big decisions to make. All right, the NFL does not rest, Brock. I know the Seahawks aren't in it. But playoff weekend still coming this weekend. That means barbecue time. You know it. Don't fight the rain. Don't fight the wind. Kyle still doesn't have power. Poor guy showering here in the basement of the station.
That's tough.
It's ridiculous. Leave the barbecuing to Famous Dave's. It's so much easier, right? Just leave it to Famous Dave's. If you haven't been there, you got to check out the whole menu. St. Louis-style spare ribs. I love ribs. Whole country roasted chicken. Maybe a little Texas beef brisket. A little Georgia chopped pork. They got options, man. Whatever your meat favorite is, whether it's chicken, ribs, pork, brisket, the whole deal, they've got it all. And then you can still do burgers, wings, sandwiches, apps, salads, home-style desserts, right? famous feasts, pitmaster combos. You can even order meat by the pound or meat by the kilo if that's your desire. I'm not sure how to translate kilo. Is kilo
two stone?
Yes.
Like Magnus Ver Magnuson. He ate two stone of brisket.
I'd like to order meat by the stone,
yes,
please.
Yes, please.
Yes, you can order meat by the stone. They also got the Q combos, so you got it all. Dave's is available for pickup and delivery, including Kyle's favorite.
Ghost Kitchen?
The Ghost Kitchen. Don't forget the Ghost Kitchen at Northgate.
Baby.
Ghost Kitchen. Adult beverages also now available to go. Perfect to pair with your barbecue, as you know. All right, go to FamousDaves.com. FamousDaves.com. Open 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Famous Dave's, America's favorite barbecue. All right, as the breakdown continues for what happened with the Seahawks season, and there's a lot, obviously, over these next few weeks to figure out in terms of where they're going to go, but while I found the Schneider decision to be awfully curious, that the one that is going to capture the imagination of so many people in the Seahawks fandom out there is going to be Brian Schottenheim. First of all, are we sure he's fired? Is there a chance Schottie quit?
Well, they said it was a mutual parting
of
ways.
That's right. And sometimes that doesn't mean, I mean, sometimes that's just a way of saving face, this, that, and the other. Did they fire Schottie or did he quit?
I think if Schottie would have on Monday meeting with Pete said, yes, yep, uh-huh, on board, yep, love it, yep, let's go, yep, love the path, I think he'd still be here. Total speculation, I have no idea, but that is my hunch, that when Pete met with the press on Monday, that he had not fired Schottie yet, that he had not been relieved when asked, you know, he kind of was coy with a bunch of his different answers, and then they met Monday, and they, yeah, soon after, parted ways philosophically. Could not come to an understanding.
So did they fire him or did he quit?
Yeah. What's that?
So did they fire him or did he quit? I don't know the answer to it. I'm not expecting you to know the answer either, but I'd sure be interested in knowing, because I think I could write that script both ways.
Pete, this isn't going to work.
Yeah, Pete.
I'm not going to do that.
And it could be any number of reasons. Hey, you know what? It could be that he didn't like Russ. I don't want to work with it. This isn't the type of quarterback I want to work with because I'm looking for somebody who does exactly what I tell him to do. And that maybe it could be the insanity on the sideline is so great that I can't be a part of this anymore. Like I need a more strong.
You're ruining my reputation, Pete, because I think this is the way things should
go. He's a Schottenheimer. I mean, let's be clear. He is Marty Schottenheimer's kid. Order. Right? I mean, Marty is all about Marty ball and run it and order and this, that, and the other. And I'm not saying he's exactly like his dad. He's not. I don't believe. And by the way, he's another guy that I think we really came to enjoy talking to during mm-hmm. his time here. So, but he, Brock, he moved upstairs because
Correct.
He, according to
Correct.
You, one of the reasons is he wanted to get away from some of the chaos that may not have been his scene and not personally like, hey, Pete, I've really enjoyed this. I've learned a lot. But I this isn't for me. I don't like all the chaos. I want to be part of a more organized system and run things this way. And I don't think that you want to do that. So maybe this isn't the right spot for me anymore. I could write that script.
Yep, I could too. Very easily. And oh, by the way, family's had a real hard time adjusting here. And mm-hmm. the Pacific Northwest is not, you know, maybe for us.
It's not for everybody. That's for sure.
No, it's not. It is not for everybody.
This is a guy who didn't even know his own zip code, if you remember.
Yep.
He had to put his credit card into
to get gas.
They asked him for a zip code. He didn't know it.
Yep.
He had to call his wife. Hey, what's our zip code?
And on 4th and 1, on the biggest play of the season, with everything hinging, you came in, even in a 5-minute opportunity that we had, and you didn't like what I called. Like, how are we going to operate? How is this? Yeah, I could absolutely write that script. That philosophically,
do you think that's what happened? By the way, on 4th and 1, Pete changed the play.
Yeah.
Oh, Pete said he changed.
Oh, he
did.
He said he fought it. Yeah. It was one of the worst answers Pete's ever given in a press conference.
I missed that.
Pete, you had 3 timeouts. Why didn't you? You decided to go for it when the play clock was expiring. You didn't call a timeout. Oh, I was okay punting too. If we could go for it, I was okay. If we punted, I was okay. Didn't really matter to me.
Disasters.
What? You didn't have any courage or your conviction on what the decision was?
I gotta tell you, I know that you guys give me there are things that drive me too crazy, but this one. This like is exactly why it bothers me that they can't call plays on time.
Correct.
And don't forget, this was after Damian
after an injury
Lewis had
timeout.
Hurt. They had 2 minutes and 25 seconds.
And couldn't get out of the huddle.
With
time.
3 timeouts, Correct. They Correct. Said, we'll take it all the way up to the play clock expires. We won't use a timeout to save it because although we decided to go for it, punting's okay
They
too.
Did need their timeouts. to be fair, they really did. They were down. They were going to need the timeouts to get the ball back. I mean, like, you couldn't give up the timeouts.
You can't call a timeout after you've had 2.5 freaking minutes to make a decision.
That's insane. That's totally insane.
I wish I would have.
You can't. You can't do that.
Would have given him another possession to try to go win the game.
You have to, what you need to do there is you need to be ready to
You have 2.5
We've
minutes.
Got
you have more than enough time.
Plus years of experience knowing that's never going
to
be the case.
You have to be able to. There.
Which is even more mind-boggling that it's always an issue on offense with a defensive head coach. So it's with Jeremy Bates, with Daryl Bevel, with Brian Schottenheimer.
Always.
What is the common denominator here?
Always. Yes.
It's got to be that Pete's meddling.
Yes. Yeah, so I could write that script. In fact, if I had to write that script, you know, I think it was as much Shoddy making the move out of here as it was Pete firing him. If I had to, if he sat there and said, hey, and again, I don't have inside information on this one. This is not one that I'm incredibly well sourced on, but this is one that if I had to write a script, I would say it'd probably be 60-40. And I bet you Shoddy said, okay, well, if I'm going to, stay here, then you're going to give me this kind of extension. We're going to, nope, not doing that. Not doing that.
Yeah.
So they philosophically parted ways.
How do you not have a play called fourth
and
one?
It is, and the answer is for, like, don't even play the answer for him.
Shoddy had a play call. Pete didn't like it and said, no, I want a different play. And then they argued apparently for 2 minutes about what the call was.
What did they run on third and one?
They ran the ball as they did earlier
out
on a
shotgun,
third and one and
right?
got stuffed.
They ran out of shotgun. They ran a little read
yep.
option play.
And on this play, they were prepared to run out of shotgun again because Russ was trying to get the snap off. They were maybe adjusting the play clock.
Yes.
It was,
gosh.
Yeah, we were talking it over and we discussing plays, and I kind of got in the middle of it. And then we got late. That's why we wound up jumping. You know, we screwed it up. So it just wasn't clear enough. You know, I mean, that's one play, you know, but. We didn't function the way we needed to right there, and so we had to punt the football. Obviously, punting the football wasn't the wrong, a bad idea either, just to get him on down and take him to the next couple sequences. But I would have really liked to have made that, and so that's why we went ahead and tried to get the chance, and then we just didn't function cleanly like we needed to.
Yeah, it's not a great answer. Also, it does seem weird that the guy tried to reset the play clock, and then they gave them the false. Like, that doesn't really make sense either, and it's not why they lost. I'm not going to blame the refs for that, but... If you're trying to reset the play clock and they jump because the play clock was down to zero, but you're resetting it, that's not really a false start then.
You have 2.5 minutes to get on
I'm not. I'm not making an excuse. You're right. Believe me. If anyone feels that way, it's me. You don't have to tell me. But also, that's a little screwy, isn't it? If the guy's doing the thing with his...
pumping the play clock.
He's raising the roof to tell you that the play clock needs to be wound back up to 25.
And it looked Russ, the refs come together and talk. Russ goes and kind of eavesdrops on it, and he looks at the sideline and gives them the same... Hey, they were going to reset.
Right.
Russ
and then
looked
they
confident
didn't.
They were.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was kind of weird. You know, I don't know if it was as weird as throwing 30 touchdowns in your first 8 games and 10 in your last
that's
8.
That's weird, too.
I don't know if it was a total Jekyll and Hyde... scheme. I don't know if it's weird that you part ways with your coordinator when he just, your quarterback just threw 40 touchdowns and you scored more points than you ever have in the history of your franchise.
All right, so what happened to Russ? Why did he go from MVP to most of my mentions saying he needs to be traded?
Oh, come on.
Not joking. You read through the psychotic things you see on Twitter. But why did it happen? How did it happen?
Danny put together a pretty good poll question in that regard this week and had 4 different answers. And one of them is that Russell just hit his ceiling. One of them is that Russ had a second half slump. One of them was the head coach meddled. And one of them is that the OC lost his way. And you know what the answer was? Russell had a second half slump. 36% of the people out there. For me, it would be 100% the head coach decided we are not playing that style of ball anymore, much like he had a come-to-Jesus meeting 2 weeks into Shoddy's career and said we are not playing ball that way. We're not turning it over. We're not losing games because we're turning it over, and we are going to throttle down, and we're going to beat Beathard and a broken Wentz and a Colt McCoy and a Sam Darnold and whoever else, C.J. Beathard. We're going to beat them by running the football, taking care of the ball, playing defense now that we're together, and that's how we're operating.
They didn't even really do that, though. That's what's so weird. They didn't even really do that. They still didn't run the ball that much. Carson still barely touched the ball in the second half of the year. I don't know. I don't agree with that. I don't know that it's any of those things. And maybe this is cockamamie, Brock. Tell me if it is. How much of it is that defenses adjusted, and then they didn't make the next adjustment. That to me, why did Russ have a second half slump? Okay, fine, maybe you say it's a slump. I don't know what you would put, what category you'd put it into, but why did Russ look like an all world for 8 weeks and like, you know, CJ Beathard for the last eight? Well, because defenses adjusted.
Mm.
It's the NFL. The other coaches have nothing else to do. That's it. Other than to study you. And they studied everything you did to make you successful in the first 8 weeks of the season. They took it away. And it was really less than that. It was really the first six or so. They took it away during that middle portion of the season where you got your doors blown off by the Rams and Bills. And after that, you didn't adjust very well. They started playing the two high safeties. And Pete talked all about it, right? I'm sick of seeing that. And that's why we got to run the ball. They adjusted. And then you didn't adjust. That to me is fairly simple.
Well, you play defenses that could play that style. You play defenses three times, the number one defense, three different times.
And you played a lot better defenses in the second half of the year than you did in the first.
Who could play that style? Who could play
the Bills,
two deep
safeties? You played the Rams all three times.
Yes.
You played the Niners, who by the end,
Giants.
Robert Saul's really good. The Giants, the Washington team has a pretty good defense.
Yes.
I mean, like,
yes,
as bad as some of those teams were, they actually had pretty good defenses. So,
well, and defenses to do what you just said. Defenses to match up with you, whose front could affect and beat your five. And that's football 101, man. When those four, I say that to you all the time, over and over for a decade, that, you know, when those front four can beat your five, then it gets very, very difficult. The first eight games of the season, you played a bunch of defenses that was not the case. And then all of a sudden it's single safety. All of a sudden it's man. All of a sudden here's shot after shot after shot, big play after big play after big play. You know, and if we watch the coaching tape together of this Rams game, all three Rams games, you'd see the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They got seven guys to cover your four. They got seven that can cover your four, and they're outnumbered, and there's no real open windows. And I know there's a few clips that people have taken on the all 22s that, yeah, maybe on one flood route after the fact, or there was one, you know, over the ball that Russell missed DK on a third down. Yes. But by and large, I mean, they got seven, just as the Seahawks did in their dynastic run, had seven dudes to cover your three or four. And it didn't matter who you played. You were going to get beat. And you were going to have an ugly day at the office. And there were a lot of ugly days at the office, especially playing those Rams three times in the final nine games.
And that's why you're not trading Russell Wilson. That's why I'm not blaming Russell for what happened in the second half. He didn't play great. I'm not going to say that he overcame some of those difficulties. He didn't well enough. And yep. And I'm going to blame Russ. The biggest losses for me of the year are the Giants loss and the Cardinals loss. If you win either, if not both of those two games, we are getting ready right now as a group for the Seahawks to host the second round because they had a first round bye. That's the reality of the situation. Why did you lose both of those games? There's a lot of reasons. But Russ had the ball in his hands late in both those games with a chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
So you know my philosophy on quarterbacks, on franchise quarterbacks.
Oh, we do. Yes,
your
we do.
Job is when you get the ball at the end to win.
Yep.
That's the gig. Doesn't matter what happened for the first 58, you get the ball in your hands at the end of the game with enough timeouts. You know, I'm not talking when you get it with a minute left and no timeouts down a touchdown. That's not a situation where you're expected to win. But when all you need is a field goal or all you need is a touchdown and you've got your timeouts, et cetera, you need to produce in those spots. And twice this year in those games, Russell did not. That's not scheme. That's not play call. All that stuff gets thrown out the window at the end of games in the NFL. You just win. And Russ did not win those two games.
Yep.
So while everyone, you can blame Russ for the touchdowns dropping and the passing. I don't care about any of that. I care that at the end of the Giants game, and the end of the Cardinals games, he had chances to win and he didn't do it.
Yep.
That is a stark reality. I'm not going to trade him because of it. I'm not going to fire him because of it. I'm not going to cut him because of it. But, you know, my friend Phil, who hosts a show in Minneapolis, Phil Mackey, is a really good host in Minneapolis. He was tweeting the other day something about how in NFL playoff games, the winners are almost always Hall of Fame quarterbacks or quarterbacks on their rookie deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's one or the other. And the only one in week one that broke the mold was Russell, Hall of Fame quarterback who lost. All of the other winning quarterbacks were either Hall of Famers, Brady, Breeze, etc., or guys on their rookie contract. Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson.
So he doesn't put Roethlisberger in the Hall of Fame, huh?
You know what? That game might not have happened yet. I'm not sure. But
it was late Sunday.
Yeah, that game might not have happened.
I mean, if Roethlisberger's not a Hall of Famer, Russell Wilson's not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
yeah, they're both Hall of Famers.
Yeah,
unless there's a character clause, you're gonna keep Roethlisberger out. But,
yeah.
Yeah. All right. So they both broke the mold, but Roethlisberger lost to someone in the other category at least.
Yep.
That game, there was no way for it to end without one of those two. Jared Goff beating Russell Wilson was the only exception, really, to that rule. Where a non-Hall of Famer, unless you think Jared Goff's going to Hall of Fame, a non-Hall of Famer with a broken thumb beat a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Is that Russ's fault?
Yes.
Think so?
Yes. If you're a Hall of Famer, if you're one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, this kind of stuff does not stop you. And especially for this long of time. Are you Russell Wilson? Are you 8 years into the league?
Next year's year 10.
10? Have you been with the same team, with the same coaching staff for all this time?
Hasn't made it to an NFC title game since year 3.
Have you played with the same players for the most part your entire time? Like, how many more excuses does Russell Wilson get to not show up in the biggest moment and take that game over like legends do? He wants to be the best ever to play this game? Then show up and take over. And he doesn't and hasn't for the last four trips to the playoffs. He has not taken over. When
is this
the game
time,
matters
Salk,
the most.
Is this the time you want to give Howdy his time right now? Before we talk about the next coordinator?
It's unreal. We need a little
what's up with Howdy time because he's been seething over
January's
there.
January's are breaking me. How's
Howdy doing?
Ruining my life, January. It's my birthday month every year.
Oh.
Every year my birthday month
Same
is
birthday?
Ruining my life. It's awful. Did you guys watch that Seahawks game? I mean, really, like, I'm sitting here trying to hold my tongue just to try and let the real meat of this get out. But come on. What are we talking about? Is Pete Carroll a Hall of Fame coach? I think he is, but why are we seeing this over and over again? The same script playing out in the playoffs every year. And we watch all of these people make excuses for, well, it's a different reason this year than it was last year. And it's going to be a different reason next year than it was this year. Something is broken here. This is wrong. You can't keep having this happen in the playoffs in the first time, the first or second round, every single year. Is Russell Wilson one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL? Then why are we seeing the same script play out when everyone else in his echelon achieves what they're supposed to achieve in this section? This is ridiculous. This is insanity. Running all this back and not making serious changes is doomed to make the same mistakes that we told you was going to happen.
I'm with you except for that. Hold on. That last point, I'm not sure. Is everybody else in his echelon doing that, or is it just Brady?
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers has been to one Super Bowl.
How many playoff games has he won?
He's won a bunch, but he's been to one Super Bowl. Seahawks have won a bunch, too. Aaron Rodgers has been to one Super Bowl.
Aaron Rodgers is not letting his team out on the first game
Number
every
one seed
single
this week.
Year.
Neither are the Seahawks. They won a game. Won a game last year.
One
they won
time
a game
they
last
won a wild
year,
card
Howdy.
Game. One time they won a wild card.
And Aaron Rodgers won some of those two. Last year, why did they lose? Because the Packers were better than them last year. Just flat out better. They're just a better team. Up and down. This year is a unique one. Don't get me wrong. And we can debate the Dallas loss a couple years ago till the cows come home. We still are debating that game. Because I'll swear to you, till the day I die, they lost that game because their defense couldn't stop them. Not because Russell wasn't good. I didn't think Russell was that bad. He didn't have a lot of time. They were a little unsure of how they wanted to play that game. His offensive line was a mess there. If you want a common theme in Seahawks playoff losses, it's that their offensive line has gotten run over. They couldn't move the ball. They didn't. Russell didn't have a moment to think in any of those three games. Green Bay, Dallas, and this year with the Rams. Common thread? No time. None. You want a common thread for Aaron Rodgers? He sits back there. You know, says Hava Nagila or whatever it is he says and throws. He's got all day. I'm sorry.
And he throws to Robert Tonyan.
Right.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
Yes.
Alan Lazard.
Devontae Adams.
And he's
going to
go
best.
Tear up
does
the Rams
does
this
have
week.
Devontae Adams. Let's
Devontae's pretty good.
You do need one guy, and he's got one in Devontae Adams.
And but Russell's got two.
He does. But it doesn't matter how many wide receivers you have. You don't have time to throw the ball to them.
Run in the things the way that Pete Carroll wants them to run.
It does not matter who you have if you don't have time to throw them the ball.
Can I just ask a question to Howdy and Kyle? Whose roster would you rather have? Who's a better team? The Rams? Or the Seahawks?
Oh, the Seahawks by
take,
far.
Take Russell out of it. The 52 other guys. Whose roster would you rather have, the Rams or the Seahawks?
I don't even think this is a debate.
Well, you take Russell out, then yeah, that's the
it's
Rams.
Not a debate. The Rams, 52,
yes,
is
not even
head
close.
And shoulders
correct.
Above the Seahawks. Head correct. And shoulders.
The New Orleans Saints, take Russell and Breeze out. 52 guys. New Orleans Saints, whose roster would you rather have? All pros and Pro Bowlers across your offensive line, Pro Bowl running back, Pro Bowl receiver, Michael Thomas.
Do I still get Taysom Hill?
You still have to have Taysom.
Okay. Do I have to have James?
Pro Bowlers at every three levels of your secondary.
The Seahawks have all pros and Pro Bowlers at every level of their offense.
Whose roster would you rather have? The New Orleans Saints, the Los Angeles Rams, the Green Bay Packers, the Seattle Seahawks.
I'll give you the Rams on that. The other ones are certainly not just head and shoulders above.
I think I'd take the Saints, too.
Yes.
But not
without question for me.
No, but they're better.
The Saints roster is much better than your roster top down, 1 through 52 outside the quarterback. It's much better. It's much better. So that's what you run into. That's what you run into in these playoffs. In 12, 13, 14, maybe 15, howdy. Okay, in those first 4 years, I remember being so pompous and arrogant at those Super Bowl. Good luck, Denver. Like, give me a break. You have no clue what's coming your way 1 through 53. And you know what? If Averill and Lane don't break in half in the Super Bowl, they win that one too.
Confident and arrogant about the defense.
Your roster.
Not about the offense.
Your roster, Marshawn Lynch.
You were still pretty confident about your offense. You had Marshawn. You had Russ. Russ was running for 1,000 yards. Like, I don't know. I disagree. How do your points are not unfounded. I totally understand the argument because when you add it all up and start throwing out the specifics, there are some common threads. But I think in this case, the specifics do matter. And I think the biggest common thread I come away with in all of those playoff losses since, let's see, probably 2016. 16 was the year Russ was hurt, right? And they their defense was shot. They were all hurt. They were beat to hell. They lucked into the, you know, they won, they beat the lousy Detroit team and then just got, they just got rolled right after that. Since then, we missed the playoffs in 17. So you're really talking 18, 19, and 20. You're talking about the Cowboys loss, which the defense was awful and the offensive line was bad.
Offensive line was worse than the defense. Defense gave you a chance for three quarters. Your whole line was
terrible. They also couldn't stop him on 3rd and 15 at the end of the game.
Yep.
You got to stop him on 3rd and 15. 3rd and 15 when Dak walked by your two best players, Bobby Wagner and Frank Clark.
And in 19, he went to Philly and won, and then he had to go to Green Bay.
Yeah,
look, the thread that's common there is they are not playing to their capabilities in the playoffs. Those teams were not bad teams. They had flaws, like every team has flaws in the playoffs.
I think they actually did.
You have yourself just throwing things away in the playoffs.
Last year, I think they did play. They weren't very good last year. You remember the conversations we had in here last year? This is a bottom five roster plus Russell Wilson. So they didn't play to their capability in the playoffs. They won a game despite a roster that we said was bottom five without Russell Wilson.
You guys keep crushing this roster.
Do you remember what happened last year? Hold on, Kyle. Last year when Ziggy Ansah couldn't chase down a decrepit zombie playing quarterback for the Eagles? And yet you're saying, Russell Wilson didn't get it done. His team the next week had to stop who? Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, and they didn't let Shaq Griffin shadow Devontae Adams across the field. They let him go burn whoever the heck was out there. It made it so easy on him.
Whatever the reason being, man, their defense couldn't get near the quarterback last year. And by the way, the offensive line again got steamrolled by the Packers. So I disagree. I don't see this as a Russell problem. I see this as offensive lines that don't give him the time he needs in the big moments. And some defensive mistakes where they don't play up to, and then the turnover battle as well. You can't lose a turnover battle. Can't do it.
So you say the roster has not been good enough the last 3 years. Brock says the roster is not as good as the Rams, the Saints, the
that's
Packers.
Right.
Yet this week we extended John.
And that's why that's the move that I continue to look at and say I'm not sure I get it.
If every answer is their roster is not good enough, then what's the solution there?
Is it the talent from the GM, or is it the development and putting those talents in the best place possible?
Well, there's one more. There's a cap management issue here, too. Yep. Because if you have evaluated Bobby Wagner, as we've been talking about, and Russell Wilson as transcendent legendary talents in the game of football history based on their contracts.
Yep.
And you have, because of that, if they don't play to that level, then you've made the wrong decision, and you have to be exceptional at every other decision you make.
Yep.
So Russell Wilson, this is a huge Russell Wilson conversation. Because if he's not legendary, transcendent quarterback, then we've got a real decision we've got to make.
I think you just got to build around him the right way. And the right way to build around this quarterback is to make sure he's got an offensive line that gives him the time to throw. Give him Robert Tonyan.
You had that offensive line for 14 weeks.
We don't need more tight ends.
Year.
Please, no more tight ends. We already got Colby Parkinson. We got Luke Wilson. We got Hollister. We got Olsen. We got tight ends coming out of our ears.
Fine.
We all talked about this. This is the best offensive line they've had since their Super Bowl runs.
And they still got run over in the playoffs. They did
and
nothing.
They fell apart late in the year. Let's be very clear. Brandon Schell was not the same guy after his high ankle injury. Mikey Potty totally broke down. Jordan Simmons broke down. Your rookie right guard hit the rookie wall. So, I mean, yes, at the beginning of the year, yes. You know, but welcome to the NFL, where it's not about your first eight games. Can't win a Super Bowl in the first quarter of the season or the second or third or the fourth. And when you match up with the very elite in the playoffs and a team that's got more game records than you do, the Saints have more game records. The Rams have more game records. The Packers, maybe not, but they certainly got three in their front seven and an elite quarterback and receiver. So probably even the Packers. So when you get to the elite stage in that elite platform and, you know, you're playing a crew with more game records than you, it gets really difficult and you can't lose turnover battle. Can't lose it. Can't throw a pick six and have two receivers sucking their thumb. You can't fumble a punt and then you can't not take and drop interceptions. Like that's the game, man. That's the margin. Those are your opportunities.
Yeah, I think people are especially angry, and rightfully so, because the Rams had nothing at quarterback.
Nothing Correct. On offense.
Well, they've got a pretty good rookie running back.
They were dead for two quarters, dead.
But they specifically, the reason being, they had nothing at quarterback. They ran the ball pretty well. Akers
they scored 23 points on you, their offense. Yeah, they scored 23 points. They outran you. They ran the ball for you. Look at Pete's equation, a number of runs plus completions. They got near 60 in your house. And yes, you know, you whiffed on a bunch of tackles. Yeah, you gave up two touchdown drives that were just inexplicable with broken tackles and missed interceptions. And, you know, you gave up 23 points to that offense, Howdy. Not three, not six, not 10, not what you did the first time in the first matchup with them where you dominated them, you know, from beginning to end. No, you gave up 23 points to that offense in your building.
He gave up 164 yards on the ground. I mean, like, the reason people are so mad is because you lost to a hobbled Jared Goff, which is a perfectly good reason to be mad. Don't get me wrong. I'm mad about it also. But did you lose to Jared? Why did it happen? They had a better game plan than you, for sure. Yep. I mean, the Rams came out, but they were more physical than you. They ran the ball and committed to it in a way that you didn't. This wasn't a case where the other team threw the ball all over the yard.
Nope.
Threw for 184,
no, Goff couldn't barely throw.
184 yards in the game. I mean, like, by the way, if the defense could have come up with a stop even for a field goal after the DJ Reed fumble, that sure would have. I mean, like, I don't know. You're right. Russell has to be better than that. And 11 of 27 for 174 yards is just a pick six.
That's a high school stat line.
It's horrific. It's horrific.
You wouldn't have convinced me that John Wolford would have put that lineup in that game.
It is a horrific,
John Wolford would have smoked
horrific, I totally understand. But how many passing plays were no chance?
Russ had
four rushes for 50 yards. So that's so four of them right off the bat he had to run. Plus how many sacks in the game? Another five. So they had nine passes called that Russ didn't have an opportunity on. Nine.
Well, not to mention
the throwaways. So that's nine times that he wasn't able to get a pass off. They called in the game 36 passes. Okay? On a quarter of them, he wasn't able to get the ball away.
And on the rest was Aaron Donald on his neck, and he could throw it, heave it up to DK and say a prayer.
And on at least a couple, he threw it away, plus you had the ones that were affected. Is it fair to say that on half of your 36, I'd have to go watch the tape, which you know I'm not going to do.
Not happening.
But let's guess. 30, say half?
Sure.
Half of the plays.
Oh, easily there's no chance. I can answer that. I watched it last night. Easily. Easily
half of
no
their
chance.
Passing plays had no chance no due chance. To your offensive line. Half.
Okay. So
that
can
means
we spend-
he had a total, hold on, of 18 opportunities. Max 18. He completed 11 of them. Which still is not unbelievable.
Still bad.
It's still not very good. But 18, a couple of touchdowns. I mean, like, say what you want. He only had 18 opportunities.
Which is why he sat in his pads for 2 hours after that game and I think talked to Pete. You know, when he didn't meet with the media, Mike, for 2 hours after the game. And when he did, he was not dressed and showered. He had his war paint still on and pads and everything. So for 2 hours, they tried to get to the truth of it, right? I'll use a Pete Carroll term. We got to get to the truth of this. So they get to the truth of it, and ultimately, you know, there's a philosophical difference with Brian Schottenheimer. So now what? I'm gonna go back to 10 years ago when you sat there with me and we're like, okay, what do you want now? What do you want your philosophy? Next head coach to be? So now you've made this move. Ken Norton's not going anywhere. Pete's extended. He's not going anywhere. John's not going anywhere. So who do you want? What do you want? If you don't know the names, what do you want out of your next offensive coordinator that is somehow going to connect this line, that is somehow going to be so competent that his head coach won't meddle on a 4th-and-1 play? What do you want from a coordinator that's going to be so good that he's going to be the difference here in Russell's end of his, or right in the midst of his prime and tipping over to the other side of his prime that's going to get him back to a championship?
If I'm Russell Wilson, what do I want? I want an offensive line that gives me the time to turn guys into stars. I've got DK Metcalf. He's my Devontae Adams. You want to be as big deal as Aaron Rodgers? One of the reasons Aaron Rodgers is so highly thought of is because he turns Robert Tonyan into a household name.
It's Tonyan. It looks like Tonyan.
It's
Tonyan.
I don't care.
I'm just telling you, names are important. He's got 11 touchdowns.
Tell you how little
Tonyan.
I care. I don't care. Tonyan. That's the point. Rushy, how does Aaron Rodgers do it? First of all, Aaron Rodgers is really good. The fact that whether Russell Wilson's as good as Aaron Rodgers or not is not like they're both. Aaron Rodgers is a great player. Just to point at him and be like, well, this guy does. Yeah, he's great. So is Russ.
And Russ has done that for 9 years.
It's not like he's some chump.
Russell made
a really good player.
Russell made lots of guys, lots of money at receiver.
He made Doug Baldwin a great player. I'm just kidding. Doug's great. By the way, speaking of Doug, can we pause for just a moment and take just a quick look at Doug's tweet during the game? Did anybody else notice this?
Was it about the Lakers? That's a famous thing that he does.
No.
Tweeting about the Lakers during Seahawks.
Did anybody else see Doug's tweet during the game? Am I the
yes.
only? I'm the only one who noticed this. Right?
No, I noticed.
It's impossible.
It's throwing some. Is he sunning Russell or throwing shade on Russell? What's he doing?
I can't be the only one. Who noticed
Aaron
this.
Donald.
Pro Football Focus had a shot of DK Metcalf throwing his helmet in frustration and yelling on the bench, right in the middle of the game, and the tweet says. The Jalen Ramsey effect. Okay? So DK's all mad. You see him gun his helmet and he throws it at the bench and he's yelling. The Jalen Ramsey effect. Doug's response. Love you, Pro Football Focus, but incorrect. So I don't know what it is. Look, we don't know exactly what it is that Doug is referring to. Maybe he was saying DK's just fired
up. The O-line can't
up.
Protect the him O-line, long enough.
Maybe. But if I know Doug at all, if he's saying that's incorrect, he's just blaming Russell Wilson for
of course.
Everything.
Of course.
Unbelievable. In the middle of the game.
Yep. So
how
what do you
petty.
Want? Howdy, what do you want?
Unbelievably petty.
Howdy, who do you want? Salk, who do you want? Kyle, who do you want? Do you think this coordinator is going to make a difference?
I tweeted it out. What I want is an innovative, brilliant offensive mind, and I don't care about anything else. All I want is somebody who is creative enough and on the front edge enough to be ahead of things. That's all I want.
I would just like somebody who can call plays on time. Let's start with someone who can call plays on time.
You can't have Pete Carroll because we're discovering it's Pete's fault.
I just want somebody who can call plays on time.
So that's what you want, Howdy, but the juice of your tweet was not what you wanted.
What I'm going to get is what we usually get, which is a positive personality who is really nice to people and will do whatever Pete Carroll wants, no matter what. He'll just bend over backwards. And just give Pete Carroll what he wants. That's what Pete Carroll hires his coaches.
Pete wants
and that's
yes
what we'll get.
You think Pete wants
yes.
a yes man?
He surrounds himself
offense
with yes
and
men.
Defense.
Yeah, that's exactly what he wants, and that's exactly what he's going to get.
Is that the case, Brock? Does Pete have yes men?
Does he have his two sons on his staff and like half of the guys coming with him from USC still?
Did he stand by Ken Norton when there was absolutely no reason? Now, to his credit, he turns it around. But hold on.
You can't say there was no reason.
At the time, there was no reason to believe that
for
anything
you
was going to change.
And me. But
for everyone watching this game.
So what?
Everyone.
But that's not a good excuse. That's not a good way to make your point. And he did stand by him for his own reasons, and it worked.
Chris Richard put this defense in a position where they're doing new things.
You can't just move on when you're wrong.
And what happened? He's gone because he's not doing it Pete Carroll's
way. Chris Richard had all kinds of problems here. I'm sorry. I think we all know why Chris Richard was gone. His defense wasn't very good. His defense was not playing up to its
talent.
Or
it was just
level.
What happened to this offense this year, which was a head coach and a coordinator pulling in opposite directions.
Yep. Maybe, but Richard had been there with him for a long time. Yep. He wasn't like new to the family or anything.
This hire will be a bit of a tell for that, Howdy. It will. Because if he hires, to your point, if what you believe, then it's going to be Dave Canales. Because he's been with him forever. He's an uber positive guy. He knows Russell. He's been coaching there, and he's going to do whatever Pete wants. That would be Dave Canales. If he goes outside the box, there is no way in the world I could hire somebody that has never called plays. At this stage of Russell's career, at this stage of the program and as developed as so many pieces of it are, there is no way
why do I
could hire somebody that's learning on the job.
Why do I keep reading from Jake and you like all these names of other offensive coordinators?
Some of them don't call plays, so you got to get permission from them. So like a Nathaniel Hackett doesn't call plays in Green Bay.
But like you can actually just bring in someone else's OC?
No, you have to get
Schneider could interview for the Lions because correct. Although it was the same job title, he was going to get more power.
Yes, so you'd have to just create, you know, and for some of those guys that are coordinator by position but not by play caller.
They have to become like associate head coach or something like that.
You could give them associate head coach and coordinator.
I keep seeing all these names like that guy already has that job. Like, why
does he
leave to come do your job? He's already got that job. So it's calling plays.
Yep, so yeah, can you pay him three times what they're paying him? There's no salary cap. Pay him whatever you – pay him like a head coach. Here's $4 million. Arthur Smith is interviewing for five different head coaching jobs. Is Covet, he's the Tennessee guy, Mike, who's developed a heck of an offensive line and play action off of
Does
it.
Does he
and,
call plays? He's got a defensive head coach, so he probably calls plays.
He calls plays, and he's dealt with a defensive
so
minded head
him?
Coach. What's that?
How do you get that guy?
Well, he's interviewed for six head coaching jobs. So
but you're
obviously,
not offering a head coaching job. You're offering the same job he's got.
Or
what are you going to offer then that's unique? that's more than what he has? Three times the pay?
But
and an associate head coach with
you,
it?
But I don't think you get permission. All right, maybe if he's associate head coach.
Yeah, I mean,
that
are always
pretty iffy
some,
to me.
There can be some creative ways.
Like Alex
to
Van
it.
Pelt, who's not calling plays under correct. Stefanski in Cleveland.
But he just won a game as a head coach of a playoff game.
Yep.
Like I don't think those are realistic names. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That doesn't make sense. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, Pete Carroll was not a realistic name 10 years ago. There's no way in the world you can get Pete Carroll.
These guys actually are offensive coordinators in the NFL.
Correct. Some of them not play callers.
But some of them are.
Yeah,
I get the ones that aren't play callers, fine. But the ones that are, I don't think are.
Arthur
think
Smith is. The other ones aren't.
Okay.
And Dable is. Brian Dable's another guy. And that's more of just a wild hair. That's not going to happen. But yeah, for a Nathaniel Hackett or an Alex Van Pelt, those would be the guys, if you're asking me what I want.
Right.
I want somebody that's done it. I don't want somebody learning on the job. I want somebody that's going to stimulate, like Howdy said, and be innovative and creative. I want somebody like a Matt LaFleur was to an Aaron Rodgers, a young, innovative, creative guy that came in and had done it before and stimulated Aaron Rodgers. And a Nathaniel Hackett is, I think, right along those lines. So I would not take no for an answer with Nathaniel Hackett. And if I got to pay him $4 million and name him associate head coach or whatever we got to do, that's what I would do.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, a little Blue 88 here, Brock, as we a lot of football. A lot of football today, unsurprisingly, after
maybe the most emotional podcast we've done in a year and a half.
a lot of emotions out there. Thankfully, we waited till Thursday. If we'd done it Tuesday, it might have been too emotional.
Too much.
Might have been too much for everybody. Let's start here. Blue 88 question number one. We talked about, you know, the broken-thumbed quarterback issues that the Rams had. How were they still so successful running the ball? I think that of the things that drove me crazy in that game, it's like, you know they can't throw. Why are they having success running it against
them? Yeah, I think two things. You could not puncture their line of scrimmage frequently enough. You did a bunch, and you got some big stops and a third and one stop, and you know, you did a lot of good things in the run game. Bobby had a couple great fits at the line of scrimmage and everything else, but by and large, you could not puncture them the way you're going to stop them. And if Green Bay is going to do it this weekend, you're going to see Kenny Clark, their nose tackle, 2 yards deep, and he's going to disrupt all the counter and all of the stretch and all of it with penetration, and you could not do that. That's Monet, that's Cedric Lattimore. I mean, those two guys are just, you know, below league average players.
Does that go differently if Snacks is still on your team?
Probably. Snacks would have played, I think, better than either of those guys. They made the judgment he wouldn't. Rasheem Green and LJ Collier were not physical. They weren't puncturing that line. Rasheem had a really rough game. They just were not active. Jamal Adams, playing with one arm, missed some tackles where he's free and unblocked, where he did not miss them when he was totally healthy when they shut down that Rams crew. I mean, that was a big factor when you actually go and watch the tape. It wasn't just a couple of the completions that could have been interceptions. It's him attacking the touchdown run. You know, is Jamal free right there? But he's got a broken left shoulder. And, you know, to ask him to go right there and run full speed into Cam Akers, hard to do with a torn labrum. Hard to tackle with one arm when he's coming free on some of the other situations. So, yeah, I would say the lack of puncturing the line of scrimmage and then just a beat-up body in Jamal Adams, it was the total X factor in the first matchup or second matchup, and had a hard time just physically being able to do that this time around.
All right, question number two. What do you do with Chris Carson now? I mean, you love so much about the way he runs the ball, et cetera, but you look again at a playoff game. I mean, you kept saying, okay, they're waiting on him. He still only gets 16 carries in the game. Now, for 77 yards, he was effective running the ball.
He ran hard, man, and he did. They did what I said, give him 80% of the carries.
What do you do now?
Is this his end of his third or fourth?
Fourth. Free agent. He's never played an entire season. So it feels like three.
This is the end of his fourth year.
It's his end of his fourth year.
He and Hyde both free.
And Parson Pete, you didn't hear a prioritization of Chris Carson. As much as he loves big old number 32, I think even after 4 years, old Pete's exhausted.
He had his best year. He had his best year at 4.8 yards per carry.
But 680 total yards because he's unavailable.
Despite 4.8 yards per carry, they didn't use him. Listen to this. This is pretty shocking. I think this is a shocking statistic for a guy that wants to run the ball in Pete Carroll. His starting running back had 4.8 yards per carry average, which is excellent.
Yes.
And averaged only 56.8 yards per game.
Yep.
So forgetting about the time.
What am I talking about? A guy for 4 years that didn't gain trust because he could never be available. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a guy in a contract year that had once again a nagging foot injury.
But then that doesn't excuse not using him at the end of the year. Brock,
I got to try to get this guy to the playoffs.
Under 57 yards per game. And by the way, how many fumbles did he have this year?
He had one.
One.
Yes.
He had a great year. Fumble and over 4.8 yards per carry. But less than 57 yards per game? You didn't give him the ball.
He's totally unreliable. I can't. He's not dependable. I can't. He's going to get hurt and break down. If I wanted to get him in anywhere near the finish line, which he never got to in his career, if I want to get him to the finish line of the playoffs to have my workhorse available, then I've got to manage his carries all year long. And even in that.
Sorry, the injury that Chris Carson had this year, wasn't it the guy cheap-shotting him by rolling over him?
That wasn't how he sprained his foot, but I don't think that was how he...
That was not that injury. Nope. That did not come from
the Dallas player,
the Cowboys game. It came from a different game. I mean, the guy has been CJ Procise-like.
That's
he's
not
been injured.
No, that is false.
Every single
year. The last
every year.
3 years, Chris Carson has played.
Hey, howdy, go through his body.
The last 3 years,
his body.
He has played in 14, 15,
howdy.
And 12
howdy, go,
games.
Howdy, go through his body.
14, 15, and 12 games. Stop. Do not even
what
try
is he?
That.
He's got hip, ankle, foot.
Fine. 14, 15, and 12. CJ Procise is like 1-1-2. That's not fair.
It's
that
not
is
fair.
That's quite
I'll
frankly.
I'll take that. Okay,
quite
fine.
Frankly
I'll take
mean.
That back. That was emotional.
It's
I'll take that back.
It's not right.
I will take that back. But I'm just bummed. Honestly, I'm bummed because I think the guy is an unbelievably talented guy. I think he's one of the rare ones. I think he's one of those that when he's on it, Mike, he's in the elite company. I mean, he just he is. He looks different. One, he feels different.
He does, but he doesn't break him. I will say the one thing that frustrates me about Carson, the one reason I think I'll agree with you is I unless he comes back on a cheaper deal. He doesn't break them. There's so many plays where he is an inch away,
yep.
but doesn't get there.
Yep.
And now I think that the way he would get there is just by giving him more opportunities to do it.
I think he would break down.
But I will say that there are a lot of plays where you're like, okay, he's got didn't quite get there. And I think they're going to give Penny every opportunity next year to be the guy
because
he's got the ability to break some of those. Because he does have the ability.
And again, that frustration, not even a shot at Penny, but... I sure, it would be nice to have Nick Chubb.
Sure would.
Sure would. Yes, and supposedly, would. Brian Schottenheimer played a big role in that decision.
Question number three. What's your priority if you are John Schneider now and you've got your new deal? What are you doing first?
You have to get to the bottom of Jamal Adams. Period. End of story. You gave up two first rounders. You have to get to the bottom of that deal and somehow, I mean, you're just...
Franchise tag him, right?
You could, but he wouldn't be there. He'll have two shoulder surgeries, two broken finger surgeries. You won't see him till September, and then we know how that can go with guys coming off of those franchises, and then here's a hamstring. You know how worried I get about that. I mean, if he's not going to be part of the program, you want him part of the program, right? You want him to be your captain. You want him to be your impact, your game wrecker, your juice. You want that guy to be happy. You want to satisfy his demands. But if he wants $18 to $20 million because he's not a safety, if he's going to argue and say, I'm a linebacker that just got 9.5 sacks, an all-time record in this league, not even playing a full season. I am not. You cannot label me a safety.
Well, then you can't pay Bobby Wagner what you're paying him.
Nope, you can't. So it's Jamal Adams is first and top priority. And then I think going to your captains and going to Bobby and Russ and having a objective conversation, honest conversation. And with Bobby, he is his own agent. And with Russ, he has his agent and saying, okay, we're at this stage of it. What do you want to do? And if both of them say, what do I want to do? I want more better players around me. Surround me with more. And I ain't taking a dime less. Those would be my top two priorities or three priorities in conversations.
Well, there you go. There's a little Blue 88 back from the dead. A little Blue 88 today on a brutal mop-up show here at the end of the Seahawks season.
People were wanting this. People on Twitter wanted this.
Yeah.
Clamoring.
They were clamoring. That's an hour and a half of passion and emotion.
People on Twitter. I'm trying to take too much out of it. I was in and out a lot this past week. Did I see people on Twitter freaking out with excitement? Like, oh my God, people are talking about the NBA coming to Seattle.
Yes. Can you believe it, Mike?
Look, it's exciting. Don't get me wrong. I mean, are there people surprised by this? Ledwicky and Bonderman have been a part of this for how many years now?
Yeah.
We knew the moment that those two guys were a part of this that the NBA was coming here. That the next spot the NBA comes to is here. It's only a matter of when. Now, if people are excited because, hey, look, it sounds like the NBA is finally
ready. They're
actually
talking expansion.
Great. That part is legitimate news. But the idea, they're talking expansion, and it might be Seattle. Yeah, no kidding. Of course it's Seattle. That's not up for debate. Bonderman is already an NBA owner. Already. He's a partial owner with the Celtics. He's already in the club. Lywicki is buddies with everybody. This is not a debate. Of course they're getting a team next. Anybody who thinks that they're not is insane. And by the way, I feel bad for our buddy Carmichael Dave down there in Sacramento. Mm. With what's the guy's name? Marvin Bagley, kid they drafted number two a couple years ago instead of Luka Doncic. Whoops.
Yep.
His dad coming out and saying he doesn't want to be here and he's got to get traded. The fact that the NBA left a franchise in Sacramento where they can't keep good players because they just don't want to be there,
That's a black mark on the league.
Ultimate pettiness on behalf of David Stern.
It's absurd. Absolutely absurd that that went down that way, and shows you just how poorly they thought of Chris Hansen. It shows you just how little they thought of Chris Hansen. That they kept a team in that city, and I feel bad for the people of Sacramento, but that city is not NBA caliber because NBA players want to leave the moment they get there. This guy's in his second year. It's not like he's been there for 5 years of losing. He's in year two. The team started off by winning its first two games, and his dad's like, yeah, he wants out.
There you gotta go.
We gotta sabotage this right now. So the fact that they didn't end up bringing an NBA team here from Sacramento is a joke, and they are absolutely, it is going to be to Seattle next, and anyone who doesn't think that has not been paying a lick of attention. None.
Love you, boys. Love you.
That's it for you?
That's it. Gotta go. Love you a long time.
Brock's gotta run. I guess we're done here for today. We will be back next week. We got a lot more to do. There's a lot more still to come here, man. They might have like 12 new personnel moves by the time we talk next week. So we'll catch you guys regular time on Tuesday next week. Thanks for being with us. Until then, the hay.
He's in the barn.
Hey, everybody. Get to the chopper!